Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach. This is Stephanie Domingo.
And Tux Lerzel.
We come to you from Bushwick, Brooklyn, where we record on land belonging to the Lenape Nation, a nation that is one of many still very much out here doing its thing, and we'd like to acknowledge that.
We sure fucking would. And we're both on Lenape land.
Yes!
Today.
We are in person.
In the same place, yes.
IRL, yes. As the children say.
Looking at each other from across the table.
We're looking, I can see his iris.
Mm-hmm.
It's very special. Beautiful eyes. Beautiful Aww. Eyes. It's true. Okay, now I hate your eyes. This is a show about scandals and scandalousness in American politics and government. We be drinking and we be swearing.
We sure fucking do.
Some of us are click-clicking.
Yes.
Others can't do it, but it's okay.
You could probably slurp if you wanted to give it a try.
Oh, God, I can't even... Oh, my God.
What was that?
Okay, no, I can't do it. I can't do that either.
It's yours is more realistic. It sounds like an actual slurp versus a cartoon slurp.
Wow. I think because you do it so frequently and like you hit it every time at the same consistently. I'm like consistency, I think that it's easy to slurp the air, right? Yeah. Wrong. It's not easy to slurp the air.
Hidden talents.
Before we were recording, I was So
are we going to be talking about buttocks?
We are going to be talking about buttocks because I thought that I had confessed all of my secrets to Tux about my family upbringing. So my dad is a doctor. So he's always been very clinical.
Mm-hmm.
He's wonderful. Like he has a great, you know, bedside manner to his patients.
I was going to say, do you want your father to have a good bedside manner?
No, no. My dad doesn't give a fuck unless we're bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
But he's always used clinical terms for everything.
Okay.
So I've never heard my dad say butt once. He just says buttocks.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah. And I thought, like, I knew that it wasn't normal, but I thought that maybe one day he might say butt, like when we were adults.
Yeah.
Like I get modeling for children, like appropriate words to use
sure.
for anatomy.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I guess
we're all
sense.
Grown.
Yeah.
You don't need to keep saying buttocks.
I would rather have, as for children, I would rather have somebody say like buttocks and like vagina and penis
yes.
rather than like your hiney and your
yeah.
pee-pee and your hoo-hoo. You
yes.
know what I mean?
Oh, what is your...
Oh, my friend from college whose mother said flossy flu.
Flossy flu. I'm like, something.
Yeah, your flossy flu.
Flossy flu. That's... I love that so much.
Your dad wasn't.
No, he wasn't.
He's a flossy flu doctor, right?
No, no. That is incorrect. He would be so upset. Like, my dad, it's funny. He has a sense of humor, but like, not about his work at all.
Oh.
Like, at all, at all.
Okay.
Like, don't make any gynecological jokes around
okay.
him. Like, he's not the one.
Yeah.
He's not there for you.
You couldn't tell him that he was a flossy flu doctor.
I would have to find a new family.
You go into the witness protection program.
Yeah, that would be the last time I saw my dad with a smile. Like, yeah, no, I would never. I would
That's
never.
Amazing.
Yeah, he's very serious.
But I didn't grow up with flossy flu, but I definitely grew up with words like hiney and pee-pee, you know
yeah.
what I mean? Now my mom, and now that I'm an adult, my mom has graduated to words like vajayjay.
Oh, that's... No, Miss Brenda.
Thank you, Oprah, for that one.
Don't do that. Empowering, like, women to just be wrong. We didn't need that, Oprah. I always knew that, like, no one else is saying this word, so I shouldn't say it.
Yeah, okay.
And I was always afraid that, like, my friends would come over and, like, for some reason...
Your father would be talking
a buttock
about
would
his
come...
buttocks.
I mean, that now saying it aloud
yeah.
makes no sense, because why would he do that?
Yeah.
But I knew that it was weird.
Yeah.
Because other things had been called out, like weird things that I've said to other kids. They're just like, what do you mean? Like, I used to call, and I still call, like a shopping cart a carriage.
So my roommate in college.
I was made to feel like a freak for saying that.
Is that a British thing?
It is a British thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's also a New England thing.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
My roommate in college was from Boston, and yeah. I remember
Lindsay would say a carriage?
Carriage. Ah! And I remember a carriage.
Oh, yes.
And I remember going to like Target or something once with her, and she asked me to get a carriage, and I was like, I literally stood there like,
it's what? Not intuitive.
Wow. I thought she meant like a baby carriage, and I was like, why do you want me to get a baby carriage? What are you fucking talking about?
That's so interesting. Okay. Wow.
I was so confused, like bewildered.
Okay, now I guess it puts it into perspective for me that it is a foreign thing.
Yeah.
I'm just like, it has wheels, it's a carriage. Yeah. You know, you can put two and two. We're in a supermarket.
Yeah.
I'm standing next to them.
There's so many things, like I watch a lot of AbFab, and there's so many like British terms that, having especially seen that show multiple times, mm-hmm. I can sort of intuit like what they're talking about for the most part. But one thing that I had a really hard time for the longest time could not figure out what the fuck they were talking about was bin bags are trash liner, trash bags.
Oh, that makes
like,
sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, yeah.
Yeah.
And now that I know what it is, it's like, duh.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, I would watch that show over and over and was like, what the fuck is a bin bag? What are you talking about?
I use the word bin. I like it for garbage.
Yeah. I mean, bin. It makes sense. They also, I love that they say like, they don't say dish soap. They say washing up liquid.
That's a lot of words. Washing up liquid.
Yes.
Washing up, four syllables.
Uh-huh.
Dish soap. Okay. Yeah. Washing up liquid.
Uh-huh.
That is so cumbersome.
Yeah.
It feels heavy. Okay. I feel like we should get into what you're about to talk about.
Yes.
Because we could be doing this for... We're just shooting the shit.
So back to the swearing and drinking part of the show. Well, my story today is from the 1980s.
Boo.
I know. Ugh. So to pair with a story from the 80s, we are drinking a true 80s classic. Today we are drinking an Amaretto Sour. I have fixed mealings.
Ooh, I love the fixed mealing.
I have mixed feelings about an Amaretto Sour. When I was a kid, or well, kid meaning like 20, 21, 22... I remember thinking that Amaretto was so fancy.
Oh, I thought I was doing it.
Yeah.
I really thought I was doing something.
Totally.
Like, I'm that bitch.
Yeah, totally.
Because I'm fancy. And
it's
like,
Italian.
Y'all it's... get, yeah. It's like served up.
Uh-huh.
Like it feels grown.
Uh-huh. I had this whole vision when I lived with my, after college, when I moved in with my friend Sonia from high school. We had this whole idea that we were going to have a coffee bar where we'd have our coffee maker, but we would also have a bunch of liquor that could go in coffee.
Oh my God.
But then we always bought, we would buy like one bottle at a time and then we would drink it before we bought the next one. So it never turned into, it would be a coffee maker with like a half empty bottle of Amaretto.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So anyways, we're drinking an Amaretto Sour today. I know that you were a big fan of Amaretto Sour in the 90s or like early 2000s.
Yeah, early 2000s when I just started drinking.
Yeah.
I was drinking this with my fake ID, thinking I was really doing something, paying money to drink sugar.
Yes, yeah.
Like, and I would drink them like, I would drink so many. Because again,
it's so easy to drink and there's so very little alcohol in it.
I know.
It. Yeah.
I was fucked with Midori as well. Oh, like dear. It was, I know, I had a problem. But I was just learning how to drink.
Yeah.
And it was probably good that I started with really light.
Oh, absolutely. Because I was starting with like... Long Island iced teas and shit.
Yeah,
like,
no. I was...
Getting
I was,
myself into trouble and throwing up all over the place.
I was dipping my baby toe in. And
yeah.
I'm like, ooh, this tastes good.
Yeah.
And then it was later that I realized there was no alcohol in it. I mean, very little.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what am I paying for?
And then it's literally sugar and and the service.
Then I matured to a Long Island iced tea.
There we go.
Because I was a babe. I didn't know nothing.
Yeah. So nobody really knows for sure who first came up with the recipe for the Amaretto Sour. There's not really a lot of like history to talk about. We do know that it was created somewhere in the United States sometime in the 1970s. The 1970s were a time in American history when Italian liqueurs were starting to sort of become fashionable in America. Before that, we weren't really fucking with Italian liqueurs.
They're weird.
Yeah. The Italians were trying really hard for a long time to sort of introduce their spirits to American culture and American audience. But it seemed like, for the most part, the bitterness of most Italian liqueurs was too much for most Americans. We liked our booze sweet. Mm-hmm. Or like, we wanted just like straight whiskey, or we wanted it sweet. We weren't,
They don't have
that. We didn't want like nuance and bitter and all of that. Yeah. There were some sort of a little bit earlier, like maybe 50s, 60s, there were some sort of like coastal elites, worldly, sophisticated audiences that were drinking things like Campari and Aperol and that kind of thing. Amaro. Yeah. But for the most part, Americans weren't into that. Mm. But thanks to marketing dollars from Italy, in the 70s, these sort of liqueurs did start to take off. Thankfully, luckily for Italy.
It's so funny. I never thought of Amaretto as Italian when it clearly is. The name is so Italian.
Totally.
But like, it's such an American thing. Yeah. That I don't.
It has been since we were birthed, but it was not before. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. And thankfully for Italy, Americans found Amaretto very easy to drink from the beginning. Once they started sending it over, we're like, oh, yes, please. We'll take that like sweet, nutty syrup that you've got in that bottle. Yes, please. I will take it. So in case you didn't know, Amaretto is Italian for a little bitter.
Ah.
Yes.
Of course. Yes. Etto is like, it's a diminutive, it's called in Italian, like Olino is another like diminutive, like anything small.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Amaretto is sweet. It's very slightly bitter, barely bitter, and almond flavored liqueur that is traditionally made, or it used to be hundreds of years ago, made by soaking apricot kernels in brandy. Hmm. Today, Amaretto can also be made with peach stones, sweet almonds, or bitter almonds.
Peach stones.
Yeah, the pits of apricots.
It's like nutty.
It has that nuttiness. If you like crack it open, cherry pits too have an almondy flavor. Mm. That's why cherry and almond are often paired together. Yeah. Stone fruits and almond go really well together because the pits of stone fruit often have there's some sort of chemical in the pits or stones that have an almondy flavor. Yeah, a lot of liqueurs are made with stone fruit pits. But now a lot of modern manufacturers just use bitter almonds or sweet almonds to make it because they want a stronger almond flavor. Mm-hmm. So while we don't know exactly who or where or when the Amaretto Sour was invented, we do know that it was invented in the 70s. And in the 70s, the recipe would have been as simple as literally adding that like ready mixed bar sour mix to Amaretto. Literally two ingredients. That's it. So that's probably why there's not really any like recorded history of it, because there's nothing to it. And it's entirely possible that like multiple bars came up with the idea of mixing sour mix with Amaretto all at the same time. And then it sort of just spread. And then in the 90s, it eventually fell out of favor as the like cocktail culture built at the end of the 90s and early 2000s. Everyone was like, we're not doing that anymore. Yeah. We were young in the early 2000s. We were babies. It doesn't count.
We didn't know.
If we had been like mature, we wouldn't have been drinking them.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
No.
But Amaretto Sours are actually starting to make a comeback now because apparently all 80s beverages are making a comeback in the 2020s.
I hope they add liquor to it.
Well, so this is the thing. The newfangled recipes, if you go to a bar to order this, they're adding whiskey to it.
Hell yes.
Yeah. Because
oh my God,
you got to like balance out the sweetness and boost up the alcohol content because there's barely any booze in this.
That sounds so good.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm on board.
Yeah. So they're making it with like real lemon juice and egg white and whiskey.
See, this is Gen Z. They're taking what they know from the past and making it better.
Yes.
I salute them.
Yeah. We are drinking a more accurate 80s version, sort of. The version that we are drinking today is all Amaretto. There's no whiskey in it. Yeah. However, you guys know, you've listened to this show before. We're not fucking with that bar sour mix. It's not happening. So the version that we're drinking today is made with real lemon juice and real egg white. The one difference between the sort of like recipe that you would use to make a whiskey sour And what we're doing today with an amaretto sour is there's no simple syrup in this. Because amaretto is so sweet on its own, there's no need to add extra sugar to it. But it would be sweet. It would have been sweeter in the 80s because you're not controlling the amount of sugar when you're
Added bitters, though.
Just a little as a garnish on top. Yeah. It's not in the actual drink. It's just in the sort of foam on top.
Pretty.
And a little cocktail cherry. That's it. That's the amaretto sour. Right. So let's take ourselves a little sip.
Cheers.
Oh, yeah. Cheers. Look at me forgetting how we do this. Cheers.
When I was a kid at school learning the golden rule, teacher often used to say, if you don't tell a lie, there's not a reason why you can't be like Washington someday. How could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
Ooh, that's delicious.
Wow.
I wish it had more booze in it.
Yeah.
But it's real good.
It's a lot less sweet. It's delicious.
It's still sweet, but it's not. Yeah. It's not like syrupy.
It's like
sweet.
I like the tartness of it. Mm-hmm. Of the like real lemon.
Real lemon. Wow.
With now some I want whiskey
go,
though.
I know. I was just gonna say. Ooh. Now I want to go to the bars that are serving it with whiskey, a mix of whiskey and amaretto, because this is good.
This is really good.
It makes me sad knowing that there's like no booze in this.
Yeah, it's still fun to drink.
Huh. I feel like I could drink like multiples of.
I could drink a pitcher of this.
Yeah, totally.
Because it's so tasty.
Yeah, it's really good and very sort of light and drinkable.
It feels summery. Like I think it's the real sour that you
the
made.
The real lemon
that like makes it feel really airy and light.
And it's not too sweet. I love
the
it.
Egg white.
So this is our final month of the season. And to close out the season, we have done this in the past. If you've been listening to the show before, you'll know that we like to tear down American legends in the final episode of the season. In the past 2 years, this will now be the third year that I am and ragging on Reagan. I can't. There's too many. I could talk about Reagan at the end of every season in perpetuity for like the next 50 years and still have things to talk
absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. He is the reason for so much of what is wrong today.
Yes, absolutely.
Started with him. It's not like he exacerbated it. Started mm-hmm. with him.
Yeah.
Like,
bro, absolutely. Yeah.
You did too much.
Yeah. Yeah. If you've listened to this show for a long time now, you guys know that I fucking hate Ronald Reagan. He is the worst.
He should, ain't shit.
Yeah. He should always be remembered as the president who helped destroy the once thriving middle class in this country and helped lay the foundation for the fucking clusterfuck that we're in today.
Yeah.
Just to name a few of his greatest hits, he helped destroy unions, he helped destroy mental health care, and he helped give real political power to the religious right for the first time in American history. He sold arms to Iran and used the profits to fund right-wing Central American dictators. And he also helped fund the formation of the Mujahideen, who later morphed into the Taliban.
Yep.
No big deal.
That's actually going to intersect my story.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. I am like so dumb when it comes to just like military things.
Yeah.
Like I'm a dumb. I Googled, is Al-Qaeda different from the Taliban? And as I was Googling, I'm like, Stephanie, if they were the same, they'd have the same name. Yeah. You know? They'd have the same name.
It could be like different sects of
they're
the
different.
Same.
Yeah. They're okay. different.
But I could see how they would be like, they might be like cousins.
Yeah. They fuck with each other recently. Yeah. But yeah, they're not different. I mean, they're not different. They're not the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
Al-Qaeda did 9/11 and the Taliban helped to hide Osama bin Laden. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Taliban's funded by the Saudis. Anyways, yeah. Go on. I'm sorry.
But so today I'm not going to be focusing on any of that. Today I'm
not
going,
yet.
Yeah. I'll get there.
Yeah.
Give me another couple of seasons and I'll get there for sure. Today instead I'm going to be focusing on how and why Ronald Reagan is personally responsible for the deaths of tens of thousands of Americans who died of AIDS in the 1980s. Ronald Reagan helped wipe out almost an entire generation yeah. of gay men just by sitting back and completely ignoring one of the deadliest diseases in the history of the world. Mm-hmm. As it spread from 41 cases in 1981 to the nearly 40 million people living with HIV across the globe today. And he did it all in the name of religion, homophobia, and political expediency.
Yeah, power.
Yeah. So I would like to propose a toast. Raise a glass.
Yes.
To a long legacy of American presidents doing nothing to stop a public health crisis, but ignore it and hope it doesn't hurt their approval ratings.
Oh my God. Cheers to that.
Ugh.
I recently watched Don't Look Up.
Oh no.
I know.
I haven't seen it yet, but
it's really
I can only
good.
Imagine. Yeah.
And it's, yeah, the whole thing about inaction because it's like an election year mm-hmm. and you don't, like it's polling wrong. Like it's.
Yeah.
Oh, that film God. Is really, really good. I highly recommend it. And it's quick, too.
Okay.
It's like an hour and a half.
Oh, okay.
As all movies should be.
Yeah.
I'm looking at you, Marvel.
I like an older movie that's longer than that, but a new movie, I don't have the time for that.
New movies should be max an hour or 45.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear, hear.
Yeah. Not a hear, hear. I feel like you need to have like a stein
yeah.
or like some sort of big glass
yes.
from like Vikings times. Like, hear, hear.
The AIDS epidemic officially began on June 5th, 1981, when the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported unusual clusters of pneumocystis pneumonia in 5 homosexual men in Los Angeles in a government bulletin on perplexing disease cases called the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report.
Okay.
This is summer of 1981. Over the next 18 months, more of these clusters were discovered among otherwise healthy men in cities throughout the country, along with...
So it started in the U.S.?
No,
no, right.
But the epidemic as we know
as we know it
started
okay.
in the U.S.
Got
yeah,
it.
It really did. Like the spread of it, because it's been around since like I think the earliest reported case, because they went back and did like blood uh-huh. sample testing on old tissue samples that they had. They found cases of it in the U.S. as early as like 1959.
Oh my God!
Yeah, because it came from. It came from primates in Africa.
Yeah.
And some few select people were infected. But there's very many different strains. And
it's a virus.
Yeah.
And it mutates strain, really, really fast.
Yeah. The strain that like really has spread and this became what it is today started in the U.S. But it got here from somewhere else.
And it could have been stopped here.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. Go on.
Yeah. So over the next 18 months, more of these clusters were discovered in otherwise healthy men in cities across the country, along with all of these other opportunistic diseases that are common in immunosuppressed patients, such as Kaposi's sarcoma and persistent generalized lymphadenopathy. Initially, the syndrome was called GRID, or gay-related immunodeficiency, but the media also called it gay compromise syndrome, or gay lymph node syndrome, or gay cancer, or gay plague. These were the common names used in the media at the time. But health authorities soon realized, however, that nearly half of the people that were being identified with the syndrome were not gay men. These same opportunistic infections were also reported among hemophiliacs.
Oh, yeah.
Users of intravenous drugs like heroin and...
yeah, because it's bloodborne.
Yeah. And Haitian immigrants, for some reason,
really?
Were also coming in. Yeah. Mm. So a lot of researchers started calling it the 4-H disease for homosexuals, hemophiliacs, heroin, and Haitians.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Yeah.
And it's like they don't care about any of those people.
Yeah, exactly. So. Totally. Yeah, okay. These are... Yeah. By August of 1982, the CDC had finally given the disease the official name of acquired immune deficiency syndrome, or AIDS.
Okay.
So that was, you know, more than a full year after the first cases were discovered. When doctors at the CDC and the National Institutes of Health asked the federal government and the Reagan White House for more funding for their work on AIDS, they were routinely denied. Between June 1981 and May 1982, the CDC spent less than $1 million on AIDS. But during the same period, they spent more than $9 million on research on Legionnaire's disease.
What the hell is that? I remember it's, learning about in biology, yeah, but like, it's old-timey.
We still have it in...
Oh, do we?
It happens in New York still. It breeds in water. Sewage? Like, it breeds in, like, air conditioning, like, big air conditioning systems on the tops of buildings and stuff.
And it's lethal?
It can be.
Oh, okay.
But not highly, not like AIDS.
Is it communicable?
I think you have to be in contact with these water sources somehow. I don't know. I don't,
okay.
Yeah, I don't really know. I don't want to say that I know anything about Legionnaire's
disease.
I don't think
there's a Legionnaire's epidemic
that I'm aware of. In that year, between June of 1981 and May of 1982, there were fewer than 50 deaths from Legionnaire's disease.
Oh, my God.
But there were more than 1,000 of the 2,000 reported AIDS cases resulted in death in the same year.
Okay.
And they got 9 times the budget.
Trash.
This drastic lack of funding would continue throughout the Reagan years. According to his own biographer, President Reagan's response to the AIDS crisis was, quote, halting and ineffective.
Putting it mildly.
It was Reagan's biographer. He's not going to say much more than that. Yeah.
Halting.
And this is likely because of the newfound power of the religious right.
Yeah.
So the visibility of the Stonewall riots in 1969 really helped kick off basically over a decade of big wins for LGBTQ civil rights activists across the country. Multiple municipalities and states were beginning to offer legal protections against employment discrimination. Excuse me. And about 24 states had decriminalized sodomy by 1980.
Oh,
between
wow.
1969 and 1980.
That's amazing.
Almost half the country had decriminalized sodomy. It feels kind of shocking to me to think that, like, that's it so wasn't recent. Until 1980. Yeah,
so recent.
But it was a big deal that this was happening at all. Because in 1969, it was basically illegal everywhere. And, like, wearing the wrong gendered clothing was illegal, you know. And so by this point in the late 70s, the very beginning of the 80s, some gay activists started thinking that legal recognition for same-sex marriage was going to be the next frontier for the movement. But every action has a reaction.
Yep.
In the late 1970s, all of these wins for gay civil rights were met with a backlash from conservative Christian figures like Anita Bryant and Reverend Jerry Falwell.
Ooh, professional bigots.
Yes.
Again.
And it just so happened that in 1979, Jerry Falwell got the idea to harness the voting power of Christian conservatives.
Is he dead?
I hope so. I hope he's burning in hell right now as we speak.
I feel like he's really old if he's still alive.
Yeah.
I think he's dead.
Yeah. Pat Robertson is still alive, but barely.
Oh my God, they're the same person in my mind.
Yeah. No, they're... Yeah. You're thinking of Pat Robertson.
I am thinking of Pat Robertson.
Yeah, he is still alive.
Oh,
but like,
damn
he
it.
Looks like the Crypt Keeper.
Okay, yeah, I am. Never mind.
but so, yeah, Falwell got this idea to harness the voting power of Christian conservatives by forming a political action group called the Moral Majority.
Oh, my God. Oh, it was a PAC?
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Wow.
Sort of unofficial, but yes.
Okay.
Yeah. He was so just I am the figurehead of conservative Christians. We're going to get them all to vote the same way.
I don't know why I thought it was like a term that we use like after the fact.
No, he decided this were the moral majority.
Trash.
Yeah. So the moral majority is a really big topic and it deserves its own episode. Hopefully I'll get to doing a story about the moral majority next season at some point.
It's too big for a mini.
Yeah, it deserves a full episode for sure.
I didn't know it was a political action committee.
Yeah. It was literally like a...
I mean, they had a lot of power, so it makes sense. They were able to really harness it to change
he was
our
like
laws.
A mega church guy or whatever. I didn't even really look that far into him. I don't know that much about him. I just know his name, Jerry Falwell. Tune in when I finally do the Moral Majority story when I get to that. But for now, all I'm going to say is that one of their biggest focuses at the end of the 1970s was making sure that Jimmy Carter wouldn't win a second term in 1980. That was like, we can't let this happen. And this was great news for Ronald Reagan, who had already run for president and lost twice at this point.
Sad.
It's sad, yeah. Unfortunately, by deciding to use the moral majority to help him finally win an election, Reagan also gave the religious right their first taste of real political power. And once they had that power, they were not willing to give it up. So, a few years later, when AIDS started to capture national attention, Reverend Falwell jumped at what he saw as an opportunity and started saying that AIDS was the wrath of God upon homosexuals. Not long after that, in 1983, Reagan's future communications director, Pat Buchanan, said that AIDS was, quote...
Oh, my God. Pat Buchanan. Pat Buchanan worked for him? Of course he did.
Yes, he's going to come up a few times in this story.
Of course he did. Mm-hmm.
He said that AIDS was, quote, nature's revenge on gay men. So thanks in part to the fear drummed up by the moral majority and in part to the names gay plague and gay cancer that gave the public the impression that these were exclusively gay diseases, even though they were not. Gay men, even men who were suspected of being gay, started losing their jobs in the early 80s. They were being evicted from apartments. They were ostracized by their friends and neighbors. Funeral homes started refusing to handle bodies of gay men or anyone who had died from AIDS. And hospitals started turning patients away or...
Can hospitals do that?
I mean...
A public hospital?
Yeah, I mean, no, but that didn't stop them from doing it.
Wow.
Some of them instead started placing patients in isolation in like separate wards where they couldn't see anyone else and they wouldn't even go in.
And that's great for health.
Yeah. Isolation. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And no care.
Yeah, exactly. There's a show on HBO called It's Sin about London in the early 80s and when the epidemic spread to England from the US. And there's a scene where a man is placed in isolation in the hospital and the nurse won't even go into the room. So she slides his food on a tray in the door and closes the door and he has to get out of bed and hobble over to try and pick up his food tray. Yeah.
This show is really, really good. It's not a fun watch.
It's not a binge watch. No.
It will pull your heart out. Like, I had to take a long break from that show.
Yeah.
But it's really good.
Yeah.
And like people need to watch it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They did a really good job.
At this time, there was even talk of quarantining sick people in modern day leper colonies.
What? And
some people were even talking about tattooing the infected to warn prospective sex partners. Tattooing, the plan was, well, it was like one person, I can't remember who it was. It was a friend of the Reagans who actually said this, that they would tattoo infected intravenous drug users on their arms and they would tattoo gay men on their buttocks so that if you were going to have sex with them, you would see it when you went to... Or if you were going to shoot up, you would see it on their arm.
They realize that these are people?
No.
Oh, okay.
They're gay. Like, they don't care. They're gay and they're intravenous drug users. They're not people. That's this whole story is that they were not seen as human the whole time. They were not seen as human.
We've seen this before.
Yeah.
Tattooing people who are subhuman.
Yeah.
Like we should know now that this is... If not just bad, a bad look.
Yeah, totally.
A bad look.
I mean, it never happened. Yeah. It was one person who brought this up, this idea up.
Was he kicked in the dick immediately?
No, I mean, he was probably patted on the back. Like, what a great idea. Man. Yeah.
Do you know this man's name? Is he still alive?
I took it out of my outline. I'm sure he's dead by now. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I don't want to be like outline. Fighting an old man, I guess. But maybe I do.
Yeah, he deserves it. The playwright William Hoffman wrote that the general population, by and large, viewed the victims with a mix of fear, hatred, and indifference. And while some people were scared and other people didn't care at all, a lot of other people just saw the whole thing as one colossal joke.
Joke?
Yes. It was hilarious that this was happening to gay men.
Oh my God.
Including the Reagan White House. They thought it was hysterical. What? At a press conference in 1982, when hundreds of people had already died from AIDS, a journalist named Lester Kinsolving asked Reagan's press secretary, Larry Speaks, if the Reagan administration had any thoughts about the new gay plague that was affecting hundreds of gay men across the country. And hilarity ensued.
Mr. President, have any reaction to the announcement of the Center for Disease Control of Atlanta that AIDS is now an epidemic in 600, over 600 cases? And over a third of them are not. It's known as gay plague. No, it is. I mean, it's a pretty serious thing. That one in every three people that get this have died, and I wonder if the president is aware of it.
Oh, my God.
I don't have it. Are you? Do you?
You don't have it. Well, I'm relieved to hear that.
Do you? You didn't answer my question.
Well, I just wondered,
how do you know?
Does the president, in other words, the White House looks on this as a great joke?
No, I don't know anything about it, Lester.
Does anybody at the White House know about this epidemic, Larry?
I don't think so. I don't think there's been any. There's been no personal experience here, Lester. Doctor, I checked thoroughly with Dr. Ruge this morning, and he's had no no patients suffered from AIDS or whatever it is.
The president doesn't have gay plague. Is that what you're saying?
No, didn't say that.
Didn't say that.
I thought I heard you on the State Department over there. Why don't you stay over there?
Because I love you, Larry.
Oh, I see. Well, let's don't put it in those terms, Lester.
Oh, my God.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Toxic masculinity for the fucking win.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, it doesn't help that he has a southern accent.
Right, yeah.
I'm like, you're real bad, aren't you?
Like, hundreds of people were dead, and hundreds more had this mysterious, deadly disease, and they were scared.
Yeah.
And, like, all this fucking asshole could say is, like, I don't have it, do you? And it wasn't just his press secretary. Reagan himself refused to even say the word AIDS out loud in public for the first 5 years of his presidency.
Oh, my God.
Literally, 5 years. He was, in the words of his domestic policy advisor, quote, irrevocably opposed to anything having to do with homosexuality. 95.5% of those people diagnosed with AIDS between 1981 and 1987 died.
Oh my God.
According to Dr. Paul Wohlberding, quote, this is the most fatal infectious disease ever seen. Without treatment, 98% die. More than Ebola, more than smallpox.
Wow.
And the president of the United States refused to even talk about it publicly because it affected gay men.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, Wohlberding said, the president should have shown more leadership. We shouldn't forget that...
Or just humanity.
I mean, literally.
Leadership?
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Yeah, Wohlberding said, at the end of the day, the president should have shown more leadership. We shouldn't forget that what we know now of Nancy and Ronald Reagan, as a couple, everything was done in a collaborative way, including saying nothing about AIDS. So when Lester Kinsolving brought up AIDS again at another press briefing in June of 1983, Larry Speaks thought that his continued interest in this topic was hilarious.
I love that his name is Larry Speaks.
I know, yeah.
I'm like, is this world real? Because it sucks.
Yeah, I know. So at this point, when Kinsolving brought it up this time in 1983, over 2,000 Americans were already dead.
So this is 2 years later.
82. So 82. 1 year later.
1 year later. Okay.
1 year later. We'd gone from over 100 dead or hundreds of people dead to over 2,000 people.
Oh, my God.
In a year. And Larry Speaks thought it was hilarious again.
So he's the only one asking?
Later on, there's more voices who start speaking up too, but Kinsolving was like the one who was like really focused on it. And everyone just thought like, oh, you must have like a vested interest if you care so much.
But even if I do, like, okay.
I mean, it was the 80s.
It was the 80s, yeah. So you couldn't see us.
Yeah. So this is, June 1983.
Larry, does the president think that it might help if he suggested that the gays cut down on their cruising?
Told you.
I didn't hear your answer, Larry.
I just was acknowledging your interest in this subject.
You don't think that it would help if the gays cut down on their cruising?
We're researching it. If we come up with any research that sheds some light on whether gays should cruise or not cruise, we'll make it available to you.
Wow.
seriously, like, you piece grow up. Of shit.
Grow up, number one.
People are dying.
Yeah. It's like the disconnect that people have with other human beings who are slightly different from them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's just, I don't understand it. And, like, it just makes me really frustrated, especially because I recently listened to a podcast that was talking about primate behavior and, like, the behaviors that we've kind of, we've moved on with mm-hmm. as humans. We've kind of incorporated, like, hierarchy. That's something that's very much with us as humans. Uh-huh. But the tendency to look at someone as, like, an other is not, it's like, it's geography based when it comes to primates, but it's not like behavior based.
Okay.
Because there are primates who are like non-binary, who are like, I guess, female sex technically, but like they can act like a man.
Okay.
Like the male primates don't like attack them.
Sure.
Like the women aren't weird. Females aren't weird towards, it's just the things that we've taken are like the worst of things.
Yeah, totally.
It's like, why can't we just be cool with everyone?
Because it's not the American way. It's not the human way.
And even like albino primates, like,
they don't care.
They don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, you're bright white and that's weird. But like, okay, you're here too.
Yeah. Yeah. If only.
Yeah. And primate societies are also matrilineal.
There we go.
And it only takes two women to dominate a man. So if there's like one female primate and one male primate, the male primate, because they are physically stronger, is the alpha. But like once there's two women, they're regardless of size, it's like, oh, we got you, bitch.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love it.
I'm like, why can't we still do that?
Yeah. So again, another year later.
I'm busy.
I know. At the end of 1984, Lester Kinsolving brought AIDS up again at another press briefing at the White House with Larry Speaks. This point, I know, he's the worst.
Was he there the whole time? He was the press secretary?
Not the entire time. He left, I think, in like 87, but all the clips that I have are with him.
Too long.
Yeah. So by this point, at the end of 1984, over 7,000 people were dead.
Oh my God.
7,000 people.
Lester's beginning to circle now. He's moving in front. Go ahead.
It's the Center for Disease Control and Lineup. An estimated 300,000 people have been exposed to AIDS, which can be transmitted through saliva.
Oh my God, 300,000?
Will the President, as Commander-in-Chief, take steps to protect armed forces, food, and medical services?
Are people laughing?
AIDS patients or those who run the risk of spreading AIDS in the same manner that they forbid typhoid fever people from being involved in the health or food services. Is the President concerned about this subject, Larry, that seems to have provoked so much jocular reaction here?
It isn't only the jocks, Lester.
Has he sworn off water faucets?
No, but I mean, is he going to do anything, Larry?
I've not heard him express anything.
He has expressed no opinion about this epidemic?
No, but I must confess I haven't asked him about it.
Would you ask him?
Oh, my God!
Have you been checked?
The President going to ban mouth about
I didn't hear the answer.
It's hard work. I don't get paid enough. Is there anything else we need to do here?
Like, people are dying. You fucking piece of garbage. I mean, there's nothing to say other than like, fuck you. Like, people are fucking dying.
I'm just
people
grinding
are scared
my teeth over here.
Yeah. I think this is a good time to take a little break and we're gonna sit with this and go make ourselves another drink because I'm ready for another. We'll be right back.
So, have you ever thought about what would happen if your airline window popped out?
Or if you can build a jetpack using only machine guns.
Well, we found out you could, but you really shouldn't. Hi, I'm Jill Chacha.
And I'm Marissa Riley.
Together, we have one comedy science-y show called, well, that's interesting.
It's for folks who like to learn about weird stuff, like how hair can grow between your teeth and what happens if the moon disappears.
If you need a break from the world or need interesting stuff to bring up at a party when those happen again, come on by.
Find Well That's Interesting wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
We're back. made ourselves some fresh amaretto sours.
Yes.
They're tasty. It's helping us. It was necessary.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that there are going to be some Reagan stans out here who are trying to say that just because Larry Speaks was making these jokes in the press room doesn't necessarily mean that that's how Reagan felt, too. But I do want to point out that when Larry Speaks retired in 1987, Reagan awarded him with the Presidential Citizens Medal.
Oh, my God.
Yes. And at the height of the AIDS epidemic, Reagan loved himself a homophobic joke just as much as the next guy. In years after he retired, Larry Speaks wrote like a memoir.
Who cares?
Yeah, I know. Nobody wants to read your memoir,
yeah,
Larry.
Yeah, fuck off, Larry.
Larry, shut up.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so he wrote this book, and in it he said that Reagan, quote, does a very good gay impression, or imitation, a very good gay imitation. And then he listed some hilarious things that Reagan used to say to his staff with a lisp and a limp wrist.
Okay, Larry Loose Lips.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Larry Speaks.
No one wants to hear your bigoted jokes.
Yes.
Ah.
He said that, or he wrote that after the president's weekly shampoo, that Reagan would flick his wrist and say, "I washed my hair last night and I just can't do a thing with it."
Okay.
Fuck you, dude. Why is this necessary?
Is that funny?
Apparently, to straight people, that is humor.
Straight men, perhaps.
Yeah.
Of that era. Like, yeah. That's not funny.
Reagan.
Make it funny.
I mean.
Come on. It's the least you can do. If you're going to be a bigot, make it funny.
Yes. Come on.
Come on. I believe in you, Larry.
Well, this was Reagan that was making that.
Okay.
Joke. Yeah. I don't believe in Reagan.
I don't either.
Yeah.
So never mind. This is on brand.
Yeah.
This feels
yeah.
appropriate.
The thing is, Reagan got his start in Hollywood. Like, Reagan knew gay men. He certainly knew gay men coming up. He had gay friends. He had to have had gay friends.
Yeah.
Before he was the darling of the conservative party, he had gay friends. He could have easily chosen to set a different tone and end this homophobic rhetoric that was flowing through so many people in his administration.
He wanted to stay in power.
Exactly. He chose instead to stay in the good graces of the conservative Christians who made him president.
Like, are you able to sleep, I guess, with power?
Oh,
I guess
on piles of money.
Yeah.
So according to Dr. Paul Volberding, quote, "There is no question that they knew many people with AIDS and were probably very close friends with them. I haven't heard anyone say that the Reagans were homophobic, but it was a political calculation. This wouldn't sell to Republican voters."
Your actions are homophobic.
I mean, so yeah, like, absolutely. Yeah,
I mean, I like, take this issue comment with, is yeah. like, I no.
But what people understood homophobia to be in the 1980s is different than what we understand it to be today. Like, people today don't realize that if you're not, like, literally, like, dragging a gay person from the back of your truck and stringing them up on a fence to die, you're not homophobic.
Well, racism, if you're not wearing a white hood, like, what's your problem?
Yeah, you're not a racist. Exactly. Yeah. So
we don't do nuance.
Yeah. Clearly. Yeah. So Reagan didn't even say the word AIDS in public, at least, until September of 1985. And even then, he only did because a reporter brought it up in a news conference and basically forced it on him.
Okay.
But by September of 1985, more than 12,000 people had died from this disease, and the government was still doing jack shit to stop it. And this is the first time he even deigned to say the word in public. So Reagan's Surgeon General said that because of, quote, interdepartmental politics, he had been cut out of all AIDS discussions for the first 5 years of the Reagan administration. The Surgeon General wasn't a part of AIDS discussions for 5 years.
Who was?
Anyone that would agree with what Reagan was doing. Koop said that the reason behind this was, quote, because transmission of AIDS was understood to be primarily in the homosexual population and in those who abused intravenous drugs. So, like, they're not people. Who cares?
Yeah.
You don't need to be here because we don't even want to stop this. It's killing the people we already hate. So why do we need the Surgeon General involved? Representative Henry Waxman wrote in the Washington Post, quote, "It is surprising that the president could remain silent as thousands of Americans died, that he could fail to acknowledge the epidemic's existence. Perhaps his staff felt he had to, since many of his new right supporters have raised money by campaigning against homosexuals." And Waxman hit the nail on the head. Reagan won 2 elections with the support of men like Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, and Senator Jesse Helms, all of whom were vocally anti-gay, and all of whom claimed that AIDS was punishment from God.
But Reagan wasn't religious.
No, but
he's pretending.
Trump. Like Trump. Yeah.
Yeah.
The White House communications director, Pat Buchanan, again.
Oh my God. Yeah. That is wild. I know.
Communications director.
Oh my God. The man is a Nazi.
Yeah. I mean.
Oh my God.
And?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God, though. Wow.
So he once wrote.
The 80s, man.
A wild time to be alive. He once wrote. "The poor homosexuals, they have declared war upon nature, and now nature is exacting an awful retribution." At one point, Reagan himself even said, quote, "Maybe the Lord brought down the plague because illicit sex is against the Ten Commandments."
What do you know about the Ten Commandments, sir?
Literally. You Hollywood.
Out of here.
Yeah. Divorced. Yeah. Remarried.
You're like Trump holding the Bible like upside down like
in front of the church that you like cleared out all the protesters with tear gas and shit.
Oh my god.
So I've read that in private that Nancy Reagan was more sympathetic towards the victim of HIV and AIDS. Literally fuck her. Even if it's true that she was privately more sympathetic, she didn't do jack shit about it publicly. Nothing. No one. It doesn't help anything.
Does that even make you feel good to be privately this way when all your friends are dead or dying or...
Fuck you while you go cry in your pillow. Like, you're not doing anything. Their son, the Reagan son, was a ballet dancer. Did you know this?
No.
He was a ballet dancer living in New York City in the 80s. And he tried to express to his parents the horror and despair that he was witnessing every single day in New York. And he said that he and his mother had tried to get Reagan to do more to fight this pandemic, but that...
So wait, she wanted to do more and she just, she didn't?
Basically. And this is the thing, is like, I'm not buying the sob story that like poor innocent little Nancy tried to do more, but like her husband just wouldn't listen to her. You had a forum. You could have done something and you chose not to. Exactly. You chose not to.
And this is his second term, correct?
Yes. They could have done something.
You're not going to be reelected.
Yeah.
You can say privately, like, hey.
They just don't want people to turn against them. They don't want their.
And who cares? There's like, they're not going to be in office anymore.
They want to still get like, you know, they want to be popular. They want to get endorsements and whatever.
Oh my God. Go to therapy.
Yeah. But so there is a lot of evidence that this is bullshit, that she was just
be popular,
as callous.
Like they're in middle school.
I know. Yeah.
Ugh.
She was just as callous as her husband. When her old Hollywood friend, Rock Hudson, attended a state dinner in 1984, Nancy noticed that he looked really, really thin and gaunt. And she told him that she was worried about his health. And he kind of like laughed it off. It was like, oh, I just had a cold. I'm fine. But then about a year later... He didn't at this point.
Oh, he didn't. Okay.
But about a year later.
What year was this?
84. Okay. Yeah. But about a year later in 1985, the 59-year-old Rock Hudson collapsed in the lobby of the Ritz Hotel in Paris. By then, he knew what was going on.
Yeah.
And he, in 1985, there was no effective treatment for AIDS. There wasn't. AZT wouldn't be approved for another 2 years. And Hudson had flown to France because he heard about this like experimental miracle treatment that they were using in France.
So he knew he had it before he collapsed.
He by 85 he knew. The problem was that since he wasn't French, the military hospital that was using this experimental treatment wouldn't admit him. Mm. So his press secretary sent a telegram to Nancy Reagan to see if she could pull some strings. The telegram read, quote, "Only one hospital in the world can offer necessary medical treatment to save life of Rock Hudson, or at least alleviate his illness." And Nancy Reagan refused to help.
Did she send anything back?
A note written by a White House staffer stated, quote, "I spoke with Mrs. Reagan about the attached telegram. She did not feel this was something the White House should get into." In later interviews, this staffer insisted that it wasn't because Rock Hudson was gay or because of the stigma around AIDS, but just that the Reagans didn't want the public to think that they gave their famous rich friends any special treatment, which is absolute bullshit because they did all the time.
I'm sure they did.
They were friends with so many of these rich, famous Hollywood people, and they were constantly giving them special treatment.
And they loved the limelight, and they loved, like, just being popular, apparently. That's a big thing for them.
Yeah.
So they're granting favors left and right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when someone asks for a life-saving favor, there's, like, the press around
sorry,
it.
Sorry, who? Rock who? What? Yeah. According to ACT UP member Peter Stanley, quote, "Seems strange that the Reagans used that excuse, since they often did favors for their Hollywood friends during their White House years. There's no getting around the fact that they left Rock Hudson out to dry. As soon as he had that frightening homosexual disease, he became as unwanted and ignored as the rest of us." Hudson was actually eventually admitted to this military hospital.
Okay, good.
Without any help from the fucking Reagans, he found a way into this hospital. But at this point, he didn't just have HIV. This was he was too advanced at this point, and it was too late. Yeah. The treatment wasn't going to help him at all. So they kind of were like, "We can't do anything for you." So he returned to LA, where he died just a few months later. Just before his death, he authorized his doctors to make a public statement saying, quote, "Mr. Hudson is being evaluated and treated for complications of acquired immune deficiency syndrome." Rock Hudson was the first ever high-profile celebrity who openly admitted that he was dying from AIDS complications.
Yeah.
And this revelation that such a big star had AIDS helped to change the national conversation about this disease.
Yeah, I mean, he knew that he could have that power. That's why he gave the doctor that authorization.
Exactly.
Like, don't let my eventual death be in vain.
He knew it was coming. Yeah. Let it mean something.
Yeah. And that's, that's amazing.
Literally, let it mean something. That way. Nancy Reagan's not fucking doing shit. Yeah. I gotta do something.
Yeah.
So suddenly, basically overnight, the public had empathy for people with AIDS.
That's trash.
Literally.
That's fucking trash.
I know.
Wow. One celebrity. Because, that's all it takes?
Because this white man who starred in movies with fucking Doris Day had AIDS, then they're like, oh.
I mean, by any means necessary, I guess. But like, this is trash.
Yeah. So a few weeks after Rock Hudson's death, Congress doubled the amount of federal spending dedicated to finding a cure.
Okay. Okay.
I need to point out that the Reagans were not the ones pushing for this, that Congress decided to do this on their own without Reagan's insistence or help. In February, the following year, in February of 1986, Reagan declared combating AIDS to be, quote, one of our highest public health priorities.
Oh, highest.
Highest priorities.
Interesting.
Especially interesting because on the very same day, the very same day that he said
this. Wait. Was that opposite day?
It was about opposite day.
Okay.
He also submitted requests to reduce the AIDS research budget to $85 million. On the same day.
Oh my God, that piece of shit.
Congress.
Wow. Wow.
You fucking scumbag.
Wow. That's that's diabolical.
Diabolical.
Wow.
So Congress, horrified at this low number, instead increased the budget to $244 million. They were like, no, $85 million? Get the fuck out of here. $244 million. Only to have Reagan then turn around and be like, are you sure you don't want to go a little lower?
No, I'm sure.
They're literally like, No.
No.
I said what I said. Then, in 1987, Reagan again proposed cutting the research budget for AIDS, and Congress again responded by almost doubling it
what to was his $400 rationale? Million. Just like...
cutting the national debt or something, which is like, no, that's not even a thing, because no. he increased the national debt the whole time.
All Republican presidents do.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Okay. He just thought it wasn't important. It was gay people and intravenous drug users. But I thought it was his
number one priority.
It's malarkey. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, Congress again responded by almost doubling it after he said to reduce it. So in 1987, it went up to $400 million. In July of 1987, Ronald Reagan's son, Ron, appeared in a television commercial where he criticized his father's administration for its lack of action. He said, quote, in this TV commercial, the U.S. government isn't moving fast enough to stop the spread of AIDS. Write to your congressman. And then he sort of like knowingly like smirked at the camera and said, or someone higher up. Like my dad, you know. Who's not going to fucking do anything, but I can try. He keeps trying, but apparently Reagan was really annoyed that he appeared in this commercial and wrote in his diary that his son wouldn't listen to anyone and wouldn't listen to reason. People are fucking dying and you're concerned about your approval ratings.
Wow.
Fuck you.
And you're not even going to be reelected. So exactly. Like,
yeah.
What are you doing this for?
So on May 31st, 1987, 7 years into his presidency, Reagan finally spoke publicly about AIDS for the first time. But he only did this because his friend Elizabeth Taylor pressured him to speak at a fundraising dinner for the American Foundation for AIDS Research, or AMFAR. His speech, however, at AMFAR, was repeatedly interrupted by boos and hissing.
Good.
Yes.
Good.
Every time he mentioned his fucking ineffective and counterproductive policy ideas, people were like,
yeah,
fuck you, boo, boo. Yeah.
Oh, man.
And he was like,
lucky he wasn't. Are they saying boo
urns?
Yes. I was saying boo urns. He's lucky he wasn't hit with a shoe.
I mean, there was an assassination attempt, but the person who did was it because of this? Ill. No,
was it because of this?
No, yeah. It was early, and the guy was mentally
Sirhan,
ill.
Sirhan, right?
It was something to do with Jodie Foster. I don't know the whole story.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of cult shit was happening on the West Coast. I just chalk it up to cults.
I mean, I don't know if it had any... I think the guy was just really mentally ill and obsessed with Jodie Foster and thought that she would somehow be impressed by killing Ronald Reagan. I mean,
she probably would be.
I would have been.
I would have been, too. I'd be like, okay, I see you.
Oh. What are you doing on Friday night?
Yeah.
we're the worst.
Are we, though? I think we...
Reagan was the worst.
He was the worst. Yes,
yeah.
We are responding...
Yeah, exactly, to his fucking insensitivity and awfulness.
I believe in Sir Isaac Newton's third law. For every reaction, there's an equal and opposite.
Yes, yeah.
Reaction.
Yeah.
Like, we're serving it back to you, Reagan.
Exactly. So, during his speech, he did express sadness for some groups susceptible to HIV, like hemophiliacs. Blood transfusion recipients
and
babies of infected women. But nowhere in his speech did he ever say the words gay or homosexual in the entire speech. In the first time in 7 years that he spoke on AIDS,
of course.
Didn't even mention gay people. So after this, the Reagans finally found a way to talk about AIDS without pissing off their conservative supporters. Just like they'd been doing all along, they completely ignored gay men. And they focused instead on straight, white, socially acceptable, quote-unquote, innocent victims of this disease. So a Hollywood producer who was a really big AIDS fundraiser later called Nancy out on her callousness and the callousness of her socialite friends. He said, quote, they were trying to raise money for an event in Washington, and they kept mentioning the innocent victims of AIDS. And after about the 10th time, I just said to them, well, this is confusing for me, because I frankly don't know who the guilty ones are. And he left. So in their final year in office, the Reagans invited Elizabeth Glazer, an upper-class white woman with AIDS, to the White House to tell them her story. With tears in both their eyes, the Reagans listened as she told them how 7 years earlier, towards the end of her first pregnancy, she had started hemorrhaging and was given a blood transfusion. Her daughter was delivered safely, but it turned out that she had been infected with HIV and later gave it to her daughter while breastfeeding. Mm. Her younger son, who was born in 1984, was also infected.
Oh, is this why the Red Cross started doing that?
Not this story specifically, yes, but because of blood transfusions. And to this day, gay men are not allowed to give blood.
Oh my God.
Still to this day.
Even though there's PrEP and like it's...
And like, they have to test the blood anyways.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
Test the blood they test anyways. The blood. They have to.
Yeah, I guess they didn't back then.
No, they didn't. There wasn't. Well, it's at a certain point. She was infected in 1981. There was no test for it yet.
Okay.
But they have to test the blood now.
There's no reason to do this then.
No, and
other than homophobia.
Yeah, exactly. There we go. Ding, yeah. Ding, 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 ding. Yeah.
Other than homophobia. My bad. There is a reason.
Yeah. 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 To this day. 2022.
Wow. Men. That's so despicable. Yeah. It's like, it's... Anyways.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you finish.
Yeah. So...
Fucking Red Cross.
So after this meeting, as she was getting ready to leave, the president said, "Tell me what to do."
Now you're listening.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. She told him, "I want you to be a leader in the struggle against AIDS so that no one with AIDS need worry about discrimination. You have commissioned a report on the epidemic. I ask you to pay attention to that report." And Reagan responded, "I promise you that I will read that report with different eyes than I would have before." Because this rich white woman.
Wow. He said that out loud.
Yes. Different eyes than I would have before.
Different eyes.
When this report came out, a journalist called it, quote, "a stunning repudiation of just about every aspect of the Reagan administration's handling of AIDS, as well as a sweeping battle plan for how the nation might cope with the epidemic in coming years." But despite his promise to Elizabeth Glaser, Reagan did nothing.
Oh!
Absolutely nothing.
But the nice rich white lady, yes. Though. He left her hanging?
It was his final year in office. He wasn't doing shit.
Oh, okay.
She later wrote, "Time went by and nothing happened. It was almost unimaginable, but the White House took the report and put it on the shelf. Hope for thousands of Americans and people around the world sat gathering dust in some forgotten corner of some forgotten room."
What a piece of shit.
Yeah. Her daughter, this woman's daughter, died like 7 months after this meeting, too.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
She was 8 years old, I think. Yeah.
Oh, my God. All the lives lost.
I know. And the woman died, I think, in like 92 or 94 or something. By the end of Reagan's presidency in 1989, he had done nothing of substance on AIDS. And the United States had suffered almost 90,000 deaths.
Oh, my God.
And the death rate was still climbing when he left office.
Of course it was.
I'm not saying that if Reagan had done more that we could have stopped AIDS or found a cure. We don't know. There's no way to know what could have been if he had acted like he gave a shit. We don't know.
I think we do know that lives would have been saved.
Lives would have been saved.
Yeah, we don't know how many.
Exactly.
If he put the full force of the American government with like American money behind the research, there would have been impact.
Absolutely. But and not only that, the other thing that we do know is that the thousands of lives that we lost wouldn't have died feeling ignored and abandoned and even hated by their own president.
Yeah. To say nothing of their families. Like, he's setting the tone for the whole nation.
Literally. Instead of showing any fucking compassion for these poor people who are scared and dying of something they don't understand, they don't know what it is. And the government is like, you're gay. Who cares?
For so long, too.
Yeah. The government, literally, the American government robbed these people of any hope or any dignity in their final days.
And, like, it was this country in the world's loss. Like, all of the people on the right, they're just like, "Oh, what if you were aborted?" And it's like, and? But, like, all these people died in the prime of their lives.
Literally.
They didn't get to have that, like, full start of, like, whatever career they would have done.
Yeah.
like absolutely. All the creatives
and
that we've
so
lost,
many of them were already doing incredible things and were just getting started. Yeah. And like
it's yeah, that's why It's a Sin was so hard to watch. Like people who are so, so young.
Yeah.
Getting so quick, so sick so fast.
Yeah.
And like there not being a lot of information and the fear they must have felt, like not knowing like what's happening and just seeing, not that it could have been avoided because it couldn't have been, but I think a lot of the deaths could have been mitigated.
Absolutely.
And the stigma could have been reduced significantly if you just spoke the fuck up.
Yeah, absolutely. And taken it seriously yeah. and like stopped being such a fucking pansy about like using the appropriate language. Like there was, I had to cut so
what
many
appropriate
things.
Language.
I had to cut so much out of this outline because it's, you know, I only have one hour to talk about this.
Yeah.
So. But there was a lot of the reports that were coming out were saying like, we need to teach school children about this. And like, we need to teach children about safe sex and
okay,
all
yeah,
the
sure.
right. The right was absolutely. All hemming and hawing about like, oh, you can't we teach do. Children about condoms. And like,
why not?
It has to all be abstinence based.
No, that doesn't work.
We're still doing that today.
I know.
We're still doing that now.
Yeah.
The Surgeon General was like, you have to teach children that they're at risk if they have unprotected sex. And the, yeah. and the government was like, we just have to teach them not to have sex at all. And like people were shocked because these reports used words like penis and
oh my God.
Vaginal penetration and
buttocks.
Shit like that. Yeah, exactly. People were like, you can't say these words. Semen. Like people were like
grow up.
Yeah.
Grow up. I'm sorry. That's like
literally.
Do you want to prepare your kids for a future? Do you want them to have a future?
Seriously.
We should teach them anything that will help them survive.
Yeah. No.
Shielding them from the truth. There, what does that
all,
do?
Like, there were all these quotes about like morals and
oh, like
I had
we're
to,
so moral.
I know.
Get the fuck out of here.
I had to cut a lot from the story, but it's despicable, the whole fucking thing. I want to close this episode with a clip from a speech that Barbara Streisand gave at an AIDS Project Los Angeles fundraiser in 1992.
I will never forgive my fellow actor, Ronald Reagan, for the genocidal denial of the illness's existence.
Yeah. It was genocidal.
Or for his refusal to even utter the word AIDS for 7 years, and for blocking adequate funding for research and education, which could have saved hundreds of thousands of lives.
Did they strip him of anything, like, can actors, I mean, what real
yeah.
power do
oh,
they have?
Hollywood?
But, like, can you
no,
pull him out
of
SAG?
So. Because people, to this day, he's a saint. He is yeah. the best president the country has ever had. Like, people still believe this shit.
Yeah.
that's it. That's
yeah. That story was a lot.
I had I'm actually very proud of myself for not this going through it, I guess, with the microphone in front of my face. Like, this is the first time I got through my outline without crying.
I cry before you even started. Just the thought. Yeah, it was really just knowing that the most virulent strain started here and like,
We did nothing to stop it.
Like that, like the magnitude of that, like hit me so swiftly. And I'm like, 7 years, don't cry. Nothing's even happened yet. Don't. And then it just, yeah.
Yeah. Now there are, yeah, 40 million people living with AIDS across yeah. the world. Luckily, thankfully, now with medical advances, the numbers yeah. of new transmissions are falling every year. They have been for almost a decade. We have drugs like PrEP. We have drugs that people who have HIV can keep their viral
loads
so
yeah.
low that they never have AIDS. They have HIV, but it's untransmissible.
Right. Viral load low. Yeah.
Yeah.
Undetectable.
Undetectable and untransmissible.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that if, you know, if they're having sex with people who are negative, they can't give it to them because
yeah.
their viral load is so low. And we have PrEP. So like yeah. the numbers have been falling for a long time, for the first time in history.
But yeah, that story was really, really good.
Thank you.
Really necessary.
It was really not fun.
I couldn't imagine
to research.
Yeah.
yeah. I cried a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. Especially the first couple times that I listened to those fucking interviews with Larry Speaks. Like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
People are dying and they're scared. We don't understand it. We don't know what it is.
Yeah. The fear, especially being in the hospital alone.
Yeah.
And like, not only being in the hospital alone, being in the hospital in a space where the people who are being paid to care for you aren't caring for you.
Don't even want to touch you or be in the same room with you.
I was in the hospital once in the ICU or just in the hospital for almost a week. And it was really hard being there without my family.
Yeah.
And I had top-notch care.
Yeah.
I had round-the-clock care. I had a nurse that came in every 90 minutes to do blood work.
Wow.
Which was a lot of blood taking, but I have a really good vein in my right arm. And like they loved me. They're just like, oh, it's so easy. Like it doesn't move around. I can see it. Like I don't even I feel very like it's like my skill.
Yeah.
Having
your superpower.
Having a really big vein in my amazing. Right arm.
I do not have that. They can never find a vein. No. They always poke me in the wrong place. Oh. I always have bruises all over the place.
Luckily,
I have sex with men, so I can't give blood.
There are so many things wrong in this world.
Yeah.
I keep having to add things to the list of like, okay, organizations and people I need to fight. Because this is like
the Red Cross.
Yeah. Because it's stupid.
It is
counterproductive. It is against your own mission.
And it's archaic.
To deny. Like, yeah. It's,
you've had a test for this for decades and you have to test the blood.
I want to talk to someone. Like, what is your rationale for this?
Yeah.
Other than homophobia.
Yeah.
Other than that. Like, is there something that is fact-based, evidence-based that we can talk about? Because you are doing yourself a disservice and you're creating a stigma that doesn't need to exist.
Yeah.
In 2022, like, get with the fucking other program.
Countries, I just read something where other countries are starting to repeal these bans. And like,
I mean, they should have long been repealed.
Yeah.
It's like, it's.
But the U.S.
is like, backwards.
This is how we do it.
But yeah, thank you for doing that story. Yeah. Thank you for researching it. Because I know that it was really hard.
It was not. Yeah, like, it was tough. But
like, I can't even imagine how hard it was. Like, I know it was hard. And I know that if I had to do it, like, I don't think I could.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I don't know. It's just, I know that it was hard. And thank you for that. Because it was a story that needed to be told. And
people don't know, I think. And it's June now. It's Pride Month. Like, Reagan doesn't deserve any praise at all whatsoever.
No.
He was garbage. And I think June is the perfect month to shout it from the mountaintops. Reagan was a monster.
Like, that's not pro-American to let your citizens die when you could have changed it. Like, I think if people really knew, they would have a different opinion of him.
But it was all about the religious right versus the gays, and like, it was okay to sit back and watch in the beginning, especially because it wasn't affecting anyone that people cared about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Again, it's giving me COVID.
It wasn't
oh, I don't have a pre-existing condition.
Yeah.
Like, who cares? Or it's the elderly. I'm young.
Yeah. And then
when
rich white women started getting it years later, then they were like, oh my God.
But also they did nothing.
We have to say that we're going to do something.
Oh yeah. We got to. Yes. My drink is not empty. I still have a little bit left. I mean, more than a little bit, but I will perhaps add some whiskey to it and finish it.
There you go. Now I wish I had some left.
We can share.
Yeah.
So yeah, our drinks are empty. So I guess we are done.
We're done.
America's history is juicy. We just add amaretto, a little sour. We sour concoction, some lemon.
Egg whites.
Egg whites.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
That's it, y'all.
Yeah. Happy Pride.
Yeah. Happy Pride. So thank you so much for listening to Beyond Reproach. This has been Stephanie Domingo.
And Tux Lerzel.
Thank you to Tim Clough, our editor, sound engineer, and podfather. We cannot do this without him. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Beyond Beyond Reproach is proudly recorded in Bushwick, Brooklyn, on land belonging to the Lenape Nation. Please note we are not historians. We are just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. Full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. Written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop on beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves. We have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.